Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
A handsome fellow named Justin Young has been supporting Independent Tech News directly for 5 years. Be like Justin. Become a DTNS member at patreon.com/DTNS.
This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, January 3rd, 2019, in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
And from Oakland, California, I'm Justin Robert Young.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chase.
Oh, my dear folks, we are definitely going to talk about Tim Cook's letter to his investors that came out yesterday afternoon. There's a lot to say, a lot to parse, a lot to theorize about. If you hadn't heard, it essentially says Apple gonna make less money than it did, than it thought it was going to. And there's lots of ramifications for that. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Microsoft is adding two new Microsoft 365 subscription bundles starting February 1st for business customers. The Microsoft 365 Identity and Threat Protection Package includes both Microsoft Threat Protection plus Microsoft Cloud App Security and Azure Active Directory for $12 per user per month. The second one is the Microsoft 365 Information Protection and Compliance Package, including Office 365 Advanced Compliance and Azure Information Protection Services, for $10 per user per month. Volume discounts will be available for both bundles as well.
Google confirmed that automatic spam protection in the default Android Messages app is rolling out to some users. The app, which is opt-out by default, will analyze messages that are sent to you in order to detect and proactively block spam messages. Google temporarily collects and temporarily stores phone numbers in order to analyze the data, but doesn't store message content. However, Google support site says that if a user chooses to manually report a message as spam, then the full contents of the message will be sent.
Evan Blass posted a photo of the Beyond One variant of what is expected to be Samsung's Galaxy S10 with a hole punch display for a lone selfie camera. Blass is usually good at this stuff, so we tend to believe when he posts them. The only thing left in the bezel, if this is true, are the speakers. And the belief is that this 5.8-inch phone will have one camera on the front, two on the back, while a 6.7-inch Beyond Two variant would have two cameras on the front, three on the back. There's also talk of a cheaper 5.8-inch one being called Beyond Zero, and a 5G-capable 6.7-inch phone called Beyond X. We'll likely find out from Samsung what all this actually is around Mobile World Congress, which is at the end of February. Also, right before the show, Apple was ordered to stop selling iPhone 7s and 8s in Germany while Apple appeals a patent ruling against it. Qualcomm paid the 1.3 billion euro bond required in order to enforce that order. We knew this was coming, but now it has happened. All right. Before we get to that Apple investor letter, let's talk a little about a Chromecast bug.
You're right, Tom. A bug in Chromecast discovered by security researcher Bishop Fix in 2014 lets an attacker reset any Chromecast it can access to default mode, thus allowing the attacker to control it. Some hackers have used that bug in combination with a UPnP to access thousands of Chromecasts and display a warning that they are insecure. Turning off UPnP would prevent this remote method, but would still leave Chromecast vulnerable to anyone within range of the device itself.
Kind of nice of a hacker. of all the things you might do to just display something saying, hey, this is insecure.
The same guys who did the printer hack. If you remember back at the end of November, there was a printer hack where they were going in and printing out printouts like, hey, your printer's insecure. You might want to look into that.
It's still probably a successful hack if we're defining them. Okay, well, so don't allow hackers into your living room and then you're fine.
Yes, exactly. I mean, what bugs me about this is UPnP making people aware that it's open and getting them to turn it off is something of a public service. I'm not sure how altruistic these folks are. They're also promoting PewDiePie in their messages, but whatever. this is definitely going to raise some awareness about it, and you should turn off UPnP unless you have a very specific reason to leave it on. But Google is saying, oh, well, that's all there is to it. And the fact is, this bug that's been around for 5 years now is something that Google should mitigate, something that Google should squash. Because even if it's, like you say, limited to the hacker in your living room or sitting in the car outside, while that's not as much of a problem, it could also turn into other bugs. And it's serious. They should kill it.
This is something that should be addressed immediately. And it to be honest with you, kind of makes me wonder how much of a serious eye Google has toward the Chromecast in general.
Like if they're not prioritizing what is, you know, a lower risk surface for them, a company that is generally good at being ahead of security issues.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing. It's like Google has a fairly elite security team.
Right.
These are things that they take very seriously because they are so server dependent and they are you know, they move in data. So they need to protect that. That's the golden goose. So if in hardware, let's understand that they don't exactly, that's not really what makes them the vast majority of money. Then beyond that, what is the subsect? What is the, how much attention is the subsection of Chromecast getting?
Yeah. That's a really good point. Although it's been 5 years, it's not like they got rid of Chromecast. They've updated it since then. They just haven't fixed the software flaw. Fix it, for goodness sake.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a good degrees. Yeah.
Let's talk about smart glasses.
Woo.
And it's not Google Glass, in fact. A company called Vuzix Blade smart glasses are now available for pre-order. They have a floating display similar to Google Glass, although it's all the way on the right side of your eye, rather than kind of in the corner the way Google Glass used to be. Amazon's voice assistant, you know her name, has compatibility, although early reviewers didn't have that. They had a pre-release version of the software. Google Assistant is apparently on the way as well. The Blade's designed to work with your smartphone, although it does have Wi-Fi connectivity if you didn't want to pair it to your phone for whatever reason. But it only comes in one style, at least for now. Blade OS is proprietary. It's based on Android. And the navigation uses the touchpad on the glasses right side to swipe and tap around. It has a built-in 8-megapixel camera, can take photos and also record video. There is a red light indicator that will let the world looking at you know if your camera is on and in use. The Blade starts shipping at the end of the month for $1,000. Nicole Lee over at Engadget had a real nice write-up about what's good and bad about the device. And she did say, yeah, if Amazon's assistant was something that I could actually use, that might prove why they're better than her initial takeaway. But what she did say, and this is going to be an issue for any pair of glasses we're talking about, Google Glass had this issue, Snap lenses have this issue. And she said the glasses just didn't look that good on her. They fit okay. They looked better on certain faces more than others. But she said, yeah, this is just not something that I would want to wear.
They look like 3D glasses you get at a movie theater.
Yeah, they kind of do.
They're bulky. They're bulky.
I mean, bulkier than that. I mean, I'm just saying in terms of the shape, I think it's a fairly masculine or futuristic kind of shape. So if you are going for something that is fairly angular, then if that's your style, then you might be more interested in it than if you like things that are a little bit more rounded. And look, eyewear is something that is very fashion conscious. And it was part of the reason why Google Glass was not there. In the review, was there mention on what battery life is for pictures and videos? Because that was another gigantic drawback on what Google Glass was.
Well, one of the, I don't recall the battery life, but one of the gripes was you could take a bunch of video and photos, but there's not a really easy way to get that onto my computer from the glasses. I don't know. I feel like smart glasses, while cool, and there sounds like a lot of cool things about what Vuzix is doing, and the company's been putting together smart glasses for some time now, is just that the wearables, the smartwatches. I mean, that's such a big market now that there's so much less of this need of, oh, if I want to be hands-free and keep my phone in my pocket or my purse, this is the thing that I'm going to be using to be able to have an AR experience with the world. Smart wearables on your wrist. That's been going pretty well for people.
Hold on though. Vuzix is not new to this. That's one thing to keep in mind. They've been doing this for 10 years. They're an enterprise focused company. And this is them saying, hey, for the workplace, not just a specific medical or industrial use, maybe these would be good for that. It's sort of testing the waters. I think it's easy to dismiss these as another Google Glass. They're not. They're an outgrowth of what Google Glass also still is. Everyone forgets it. Nicole even forgot it in this article. Google Glass is still in existence and sold in the enterprise. It's trying to say, hey, instead of a big bulky gaming set being the future of AR, maybe something that helps you with notifications is it. And like you said, Sarah, it's a big full screen rather than just a tiny little thing up in the upper right, which is what the first generations of Google Glass were.
Well, sure. Yeah. The enterprise is certainly a market for something like this. And as you mentioned, Vuzix has been around for a while, been working on a lot of this technology for some time. For the consumer market, which is what the Engadget's review was focused on, it sounds like it's there's still that, do I want this on my face? Does it look right? Is it too much? Is it too futuristic? Is that red light going to freak everybody out the way?
I don't know that Vuzix cares about that mass audience, though. They want to give it to a more practical, businessy use, which may not care as much. I don't know. I may be wrong.
Here's the one thing I will say real quick about the consumer element, pictures and video. Pictures and video that upload automatically to the cloud. The best camera you have is the camera that you can take the fastest picture with. If it's already on your face, I don't know why that there's not there. Well, I do. It's battery and storage. But that's, to me, I think, the breakthrough there.
Yeah, this is not the only one out there. North, we talked about North back in November. They not quite as feature-filled as Vuzix, but we're going to keep seeing these incremental steps. I don't think Vuzix is it, but it's moving us towards it. 9to5 Google found a change to Android's Garrett source code management with a README file that explains that Google's Fuchsia OS will use a specially designed version of the Android runtime to be able to run Android apps. Now, it's unclear whether the special runtime will replace Android's Linux kernel calls with calls to Fuchsia's Zircon kernel, or instead create a Linux virtual machine using Fuchsia's virtual machine system, Machina. For those of you who don't care about all that, though, the bottom line is whenever Google does decide to roll out Fuchsia devices, they'll be able to run Android apps. And definitely looks like Google wants Fuchsia to be its everything OS of the future. And we all are going to love it, right?
Yeah, man, I'm pumped. 2019, year of the Fuchsia.
Yeah, I'm curious if we'll see an announcement about it at I.O. At least some sort of developer announcement to say, yeah, you know, we've been kind of cagey about Fuchsia, but here's what it is. I don't think we'll see device announcements quite yet. I'd be a little surprised at that. But I think we'll hear them start to talk about it, because I think they do want to replace Android and Chrome OS with it eventually. And having it run Android apps, that's one of the things that makes Chrome OS usable, is being able to run the Android apps. And that would be this is an essential step for it.
Yeah, and this would be a good time to get into it, right? Get developers thinking about it, playing with it, having, you know, some sort of access to what the future would look like.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, why don't we wait for CES to announce things? Oh, no, my friends. That's what LG just said to you. They say that's for chumps, in fact. LG announced an 88-inch Z9 OLED TV with 8K upscaling. It is the 8K 75-inch SM99 run on LG's second-gen Alpha 9 processor, which supposedly determines the best visual output. Amazon Voice Services also joins Google Assistant in the TVs, both of which work with LG's Think AI.
Yeah, LG, man. This is their new tradition. They've been doing this for years now. And they even had one earlier in December. They're like, this is what we're going to talk about. I think ThinQ was the one thing they talked about on stage last year, Sarah, if I remember right, they hadn't announced everything already.
It definitely was last year, because we spent a whole show saying, is it Think or ThinQ?
ThinQ, right.
I had to go back and look at the keynote again to see what they said. I think we were all wrong. But okay, 88 inch. I don't have a wall big enough for that. 8K upscaling. Well, my eyes aren't even very good anymore. But if I had the money, I'd still want one.
Yeah. Man, I'm just glad that CES is getting TVs. It's been too long.
Yeah.
Finally. LG. Samsung.
TVs. Well, I mean, obviously we can kind of make the jokes here. I'm sure everybody here except for me that's going to CES can practice their stock CES jokes about, you know, the kind of things that are always there and the kind of announcements that always happen. It's hard to kind of put it into context until you see the rest of the competition. But Tom, where do you think this as an omen points to where the competition will be?
Yeah, well, we're going to see a lot of 8K talk. That's going to be the new talk is 8K, and 8K upscaling seems like one of the frequent gambits that we'll see people with, like, hey, yeah, there's no 8K content, but we'll take that 4K content and we'll make it 8K. And everyone has any sense will go, why would I need to do that? Because that's not 8K's benefit. We can't even, like you said, Sarah, we can't even see the pixels. So it'll be interesting to watch that happen. But yeah, we're going to see a lot of 8K talk in the TV world. We're going to see a lot of 5G everything. We're going to see a lot of voice assistant everything. So two out of three of the big trends in this LG announcement.
And also, I mean, was it this year, or will it be this year, or was it also last year, the idea of all the voice assistants can party in this device?
Yeah, last year it was Google and everything, right? Amazon was kind of trailing in the announcement department. They got a lot of announcements, but I have a feeling it's going to be neck and neck between those two this year.
Yeah. Voice assistant house party.
Yeah, because voice assistant smart house party.
Ooh.
To get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, don't forget, folks, you can subscribe to our other show, dailytechheadlines.com. All right. Apple issued a letter to investors revising its quarterly revenue down to $84 billion for this. It's their Q1, but it's the fourth quarter of anybody else's year. Not everybody else's, but the calendar year. So it gets a little confusing. They talk about Q1, even though we think of it as Q4. It was the holiday quarter. They had to revise their holiday quarter revenue forecast down. In November, they had forecast $89 billion. Now, $84 billion would be down 5% over last year. It would be the first year-over-year quarterly decline since 2016. The first change to a forecast that Apple has made in more than 15 years. Apple's stock market value, of course, tumbled to below $700 million. Back in October, it had peaked at $1.1 trillion, if you remember. In the investor letter, Tim Cook attributed the problem to sales problems in China, including Hong Kong and Taiwan. 20% of Apple's revenue comes from that region. So that is a believable reason. The reason it would be not getting as much revenue from China, slowing phone sales in China, increased competition in China, a decelerating market. China's just generally not doing as economically robust as it has been. A strengthening dollar, and this gets touted as a main reason. I think it's a lesser reason, but it is a reason. The U.S.-China trade dispute, which Apple claims reduced traffic to its Chinese stores. A little bit of patriotism, like, hey, maybe I will buy a Huawei after all. Earlier launch of the iPhone XS didn't help, Apple says, because a lot of their sales got moved before the quarter. Supply constraints were blamed. More people replacing batteries instead of upgrading was noted, although that's just part of the general trend of people keeping their phones longer. The other divisions, not iPhone, rose 19%. In a memo obtained by Bloomberg that Tim Cook sent to his employees, he said iPhone activations in the U.S. and Canada set a new Christmas Day record for the company. We expect to set all-time revenue records in key markets, including the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, Western European countries, including Germany and Italy, and countries across the Asia-Pacific region like Korea and Vietnam. So he's trying to calm the employees down, saying, look, we're fine. We're doing great everywhere. It's just China. So, okay, why is this happening? The armchair evaluation is pricing, but there's a good reason for them to be raising the pricing. First of all, it's right there with the other top-end phones. Average revenue per unit has been rising for Apple. They're also just something that's not going to matter. Longer-lasting phones. Bay Street Research says the phone upgrade cycle has risen across markets from 24 months to 35 months between 2015 and 2018. And the other revenue streams have not caught up to the iPhone yet. The watch ecosystem, that's only a tenth of iPhone revenue. Cars don't have them. TV service, don't have it. Smart glasses, not there. R&D has more than doubled for Apple since 2014, but services revenue has not kept pace. While it's rising, it rose $2.4 billion. It's not enough to make up the sales loss of $9 billion. Services make up less than 25% of
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
iPhone sales. Things like Netflix pulling its in-app subscriptions aren't going to help that. Now, Apple said customers spent a record $1.22 billion in the App Store between December 24th and December 31st. They also set a record for New Year's Day App Store revenue, but that's just not enough. The other one to note is India is the potential new growth market as China slows down. Its revenue is flat. China, between 2011 and 2012, grew 80 to 90% per year for Apple. India's flat right now in an equivalent period. Pricing is an issue in that market because you can find a lot of other cheaper, good phones there. Now, longer-lasting phones could be good for Apple because it means people stay in the iOS market longer if they have an iPhone, which means they can make more money on services. So I present this to you, Justin and Sarah. Yeah. Apple knew that iPhone sales were going to decline. That's not a surprise to them. And it knows it needs new products and increases services to fill the gap. And it has plans for that. But this unexpected China drop and a slower than expected uptake in sales in India are what's causing this problem. Now, take that and say, okay, is this just a bump in the road for Apple? Or is this, you know, Tim Cook ain't no Steve Jobs. He can't do this.
I mean, I hesitate to go the full Monty there because I think that that tends to be a very complicated question, and nobody is Steve Jobs. It's what made Steve Jobs Steve Jobs, right? I do think that this might be the end of the days of endless optimism for Apple, that this is the end of the yellow brick road. They have been over-reliant on China and foreign growth to continue to soften the blow of this market commoditizing, of the fact that there are cheaper phones that do increasingly more and more and more of what made the iPhone special. That this is also, to me, a little bit of a hangover of the fact that there was a super cycle of upgrades for the 10. The 10 was looked at as, this is, we're going back to the old days where now all of a sudden you get a new phone and it does all these new crazy things. Apple's putting a lot of effort into this 10-year anniversary phone. And now, all right, it's a little bigger. It's a little faster. We're kind of back to where we were before that super cycle. Beyond that, I think obviously there's you can quibble about where we are in terms of the trade war talk, but I think this is more about where Apple is right now, and I think it's also kind of troubling to say, all right, so now they're going to rely even harder on the toll they take in in-app purchases when that seems to have been a barrier for creating some of their making some of their in-home devices like Apple TV and the iPhone. There are now harder barriers to entry for big companies like Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that, where they don't want to pay that toll. That to me is a bad omen. These are cloudy skies for Apple in a way that I don't think we have seen in a very, very, very long time.
They should have just kept it really hard to replace the battery. I'm kidding, of course. Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Justin. I think this was inevitable. There was a time, let's call it 5 years ago, where the Chinese market was surging. The iPhone was, whether or not you wanted an iPhone, it was still seen as this is the fancy phone, this is the expensive phone if you can afford it. Apple has been riding on that for so long. And in the Chinese market specifically, and certainly other markets across the world, there are just phones that are just as nice and people prefer in many cases. The iPhone is not necessarily this fancy Porsche of a car or of a phone, you know, like a fancy car. That it once was, just because there's so much competition with phones that are better. And like you mentioned, Tom, if it's a Chinese made phone, then there might be some of that going on in China as well. As far as the Indian market, yeah, Apple's got an issue there because the phones are just priced high enough that they're out of reach for a big part of the population. And it's a huge market, a huge, huge potential market. But I also think that Tim Cook, the points that he's making all seem pretty legit. It doesn't sound to me like, oh, Apple, you know, they're really screwing up. He's no Steve Jobs. It's like Tim Cook has been doing quite well for some time. I mean, let's not forget that just a few months ago, it was the $1 trillion company. So this is, it's troubling because the holiday quarter has historically been so good for Apple, and that their quarters, you know, are record-breaking year over year, quarter over quarter. But it is embarrassing, really, to have to revise something like this.
Oh, sweet Lord. Yeah. And beyond that, this is kind of strike two from market watchers, because they previously said that they weren't going to report iPhone, Mac and iPad unit sales going forward. You know, this is the second time that Apple has had to make an announcement that said market wise, things are not going to be the way that they used to. And yes, they can compare to their competitors in Samsung and Google that they don't report that. They're not Apple. They're not the company that made these kind of gaudy unit numbers famous on a level that hadn't been there. All that being said, yes, this might be the end of the yellow brick road for Apple, but let's not make the mistake that many people did about Microsoft, 10 years ago, and act like they're roadkill now.
Yeah.
I don't think that this is in any way a sign that Apple is in any kind of serious harm, but I do think that they are shifting into a different phase of their business life.
As BioCow in our chat room says, one bad Apple quarter, don't spoil the whole stock, girl.
No.
and the non-iPhone hardware areas, They're just not a big piece of Apple's overall pie right now. It is still the iPhone.
Not yet. Yeah. I honestly don't think the trade war has as much to do with this as India. I don't even think the trade war has as much to do with it as just China's economy in general slowing down before there was even a hint of a trade war. And it's slowing down faster than we thought. I think that the trade war part of this accelerates it a bit. But it's mostly China is decelerating faster than everybody expected. This is hitting Samsung, too. And Samsung isn't having a trade war. So Samsung and Apple are in the position of Nokia and BlackBerry. And history is against them that, hey, you know what? Huawei, ZTE, Xiaomi, the Vivo, those are the Apples and Samsungs of 10 years ago. And unless you do something really innovative, you're going to end up like Nokia and BlackBerry. And that's what we're seeing happen in India. India is where Apple should be growing to make up for a declining China, even if it does decline faster, and it's flat. And that's not a good sign for them.
Well, thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. Always a good sign to see all of you in there voting on stories and submitting your own. You can go to dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com and join the party. You can also hang out on Facebook if you like. Facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow is where to find us there.
Let's check out the mailbag.
Let's do it. This one comes
from anonymous. The person requested to remain anonymous.
Okay. Anon says, just listening to episode 3439, that was yesterday's show, and the impression I got from Tim Stevens is that the state of EV competition for 2019 is still up in the air at the moment. That's exactly how I've been feeling as a brand new EV driver. I was lucky enough to receive my 2019 Jaguar I-Pace in mid-December, took it on its first road trip over the holidays. Because of the lack of real alternatives to Tesla until this year, I'm not sure if some of the issues I've met are quirks of the industry, quirks of the company, were just problems that need to be looked at in the shop. As a consumer, one major issue I've noticed while traveling, the lack of standardized charging stations. While apps map out a large number of charging stations on your route, the majority of these are level half, providing AC electricity. Some of these are listed charging stations, but they're really just outdoor outlets. The Tesla and non-Tesla divide is also reminiscent of the Apple non-Apple situation, where you need separate systems and adapters to track or use certain Tesla stations. Since this sounds like a commercial, electric options are really starting to pick up this year. I'd love to know if any of the audience members have inside information or just some hot takes on the technology and the EV ecosystem in general and how to maneuver in this new space.
Yeah. So if anybody actually knows, let us know. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Also emailed Tim Stevens because we focused so much on the models yesterday. We really didn't talk about the infrastructure. So Tim sent us some further thoughts saying, frankly, Tesla's charging network blows everyone else's out of the water. But over the next 2 years, that'll change significantly. Electrify America is blowing up in a big way next year, funded largely by VW, and they're putting a raft of high-speed and standards-based chargers in places like Home Depot and Walmart. I hope they'll catch up and perhaps even surpass the supercharger network because I'm always rooting for the non-proprietary solution. For today, though, the big question is, how far do you really need to go? A good way to think of this is, how often would you need to stop for gas if your car was always topped up for you every morning? For most people, the answer is a couple times a year at most. So then it becomes a question of whether there are chargers along the route to where you need to go. And that varies hugely based on locale. Here in New York, there are fast chargers on nearly every major highway rest area. Most states, though, are not so lucky. Thank you, Tim, for the follow-up.
Thank you very much, Tim. And thanks to Justin Robert Young for being with us this beautiful, fine Thursday. I almost said Friday. Feels like Friday. I don't know what day it is. Happy New Year to you, and let folks know where they can keep up with your work.
Well, I'll tell you what. You want to hear a little bit more about the trade war? Well, you can listen to my politics podcast, the Politics, Politics, Politics. But I got a little night attack plug for you guys, because on January 22nd, Brian and I will be releasing our new comedy album. It is going to feature the music of one of the most talented people that I have ever had a chance to come across in all my wanderings on the internet, a man by the name of Stephen Cogswell. For over 3 years, after every single episode, he makes a song using our audio from that episode, and we are finally going to give him his just due by putting his best work on an album. It's going to be released on January 22nd. You're going to hear me talk about it quite a bit because we really, really, really want this thing to hit the Billboard comedy charts. He has worked so hard for literally no money. This is the least that we could do. So more info on that as we go forward. But January 22nd, circle it on your calendar.
Got it. Done. Awesome. Folks, if you are not a member of DTNS or if you let your membership lapse, now's a good time to get back in. Everybody who stays with the Patreon at their particular tiers for 3 months starting January 2nd at the highest levels will get merchandise with Len's 5-year anniversary art on it. Co-executive producers and analysts get a sticker, advisors get a poster, and master-level folks get a mug. So if you've been thinking about raising your pledge, now would be a good time to do that. Or if you join, you might want to join in at one of these levels that gets you the cool Len Peralta stuff. Again, if you are already a member, if you don't change your tier, 3 months from January 2nd, and if you're a new member, 3 months from the day you join, as long as you stay at that tier without changing it. And don't forget, you can always get DTNS stuff at dailytechnewsshow.com/store.
You can also always give us feedback. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Keep it coming. We love reading them and sometimes looking at those pictures that you send. We're live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 21:30 UTC. And you can find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
Back tomorrow. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt.
And Sean.
From Two Black Guys.
With good credit. From a local business to a global corporation.
Partnering with Bank of America gives your operation access to exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful you'll make every move matter.
Visit bankofamerica.com/banking for business to learn more.
What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.